This season, the Tottenham Way is sponsored by Harry's, and Harry's are the US shaving company hoping to make a big impact in the UK. And if you go to harrys.com/Tottenham, you can get your trial set for £3.95. That is usually worth £11.95. For that £3.95, you will get some shaving foam, a razor with five blades, a travel cover, and a handle in a colour of your choice. My handle is orange, Dan. What colour is yours?
That's quite racy. Mine's grey.
Grey. That's a bit bleak, but there is another third colour available. We don't know what that is, but do check it out. Go to harrys.com/Tottenham. Get your trial set for £3.95. Dan and I have both got it, and we both love it because it gives you the choice of when you would like to receive your blades. Thanks very much for listening, and enjoy the pod. Just myself and Dan. How are you, Dan?
I'm okay. A bit December Dan.
Bit December Dan.
Getting there.
First it's still outing of December Dan this season.
Well, it's still early December, so I'll get progressively more December Dan as the month goes on.
If anyone hasn't listened to this podcast before, how best to describe December Dan? Just sort of...
It's a phrase you coined a few years ago, so you tell me. Well, I just get tired and grumpy.
Yeah, but I wouldn't say you're not melancholic. I would say that you're almost sort of passive. Like, you kind of chat to you about... we'll speak about it in a sec, but we just watched the FA Cup draw, and there was a couple of good draws in there, a couple of derbies, but the rest of it was very bleak, and you were quite worried, I think, about drawing somewhere that you perhaps wouldn't have wanted to go and report on. But as it is, we got a home fixture against AFC Wimbledon, probably about as good as it could have gone. Would have probably preferred an away game, partly because, well, don't really like going to Wembley all that much, but if we're going to do this, then it would be nice to go to some away grounds for the FA Cup and then go back for the semi-finals, really, wouldn't it? Because it feels a bit humdrum now.
Yeah, I think it's the best draw Spurs could have hoped for, really. Obviously, the FA Cup seems to have taken on more importance without Spurs having kicked a ball in it, just because the league's gone to pot and there's all this talk about silverware and Spurs are already out of the League Cup and the Champions League's going to be so difficult. So it's like it's the FA Cup or nothing. So it is an important competition. And what more could you ask than a home draw against, I think, League One side?
Yeah, so I think they got promoted. I think they won at Wembley in the playoffs last season,
right?
If I remember rightly. There's no real kind of narrative to this. We looked a little bit before we started recording. I think the only player that's got any links to both is Dean Parrott, who was once of our youth team.
Yeah, once the next big thing from our youth team.
One of many.
It's like him and John Bostock were the guys to look out for, the next England and Spurs midfield.
I think the only times he ever played was when Redknapp threw the Europa League and played like Townsend at left back and Ryan Fredericks and Tom Carroll for his obligatory December outing on this podcast. Yeah,
I think everyone likes AFC Wimbledon, don't they? Because they're not MK Dons.
Yes.
So yeah. Everyone's just like, yeah, I quite like them. Don't know much about them, but yeah, we'll take it.
Yeah, but got to consider as well, we got into a bit of trouble last year against League 2 Wickham, I think. There might be League 1 as well, but we got
yes,
into a bit of
trouble.
Yes, they
were League 2, definitely.
And we nearly completely messed that one up as well. So I suppose some lessons to be learned before we sort of start planning for the fourth round.
Yeah, completely. And I think it starts with Poch, doesn't it? His attitude toward the Cups has been contentious, shall we say. It's certainly divided fans, split them down the middle. And I think however he feels about them, he should probably just stop saying, I don't care about winning them. Mm-hmm. Or he's not actually said that. But in as many words, they're not my priority. So I think he should probably change the message before the Wimbledon game next month. But it's going to be difficult because the West Ham game's now been rearranged. So it's Swansea and West Ham within the space of 3 days. Swansea on the 2nd in Swansea, which is such a long trip. Then it's West Ham at Wembley on the 4th. And then a few days later, the West Ham game's on a Thursday. Then a few days later, it'll be the FA Cup weekend. So Spurs will be hosting Wimbledon on the Saturday or Sunday. So you imagine whatever happens, or whatever happened, you know, whether it was Arsenal away or AFC Wimbledon home, Poch would have to change the team for that one.
Yeah, it's kind of played into that whole...
Yeah, so I think he would have done it regardless. So it made it even more important to get kind of a fairly nice draw if Spurs do want to progress. But I wouldn't expect it to be a particularly strong team given the fixtures beforehand.
No, not at all. Well, what is a strong team at the moment? Because we seem to be patching it up and putting an 11 out somehow, despite form and fitness at the moment. We will come on to the football. But there was another story that came out today. I think it was the Men in Blazers podcast that Mark Clattenburg
went on to
within the last few days, as far as I can tell. And the subject of the Battle of the Bridge came up, the 2-2 a couple of seasons ago, which Clattenburg refereed and obviously saw us mathematically lose out on the title, and in which we kicked seven shades out of Chelsea. And it's still... that divides fans as well a little bit. I think a lot of people love it because it's like we went down with a fight, and then there's other people that think that we completely lost our heads and we went 2-0 up and we didn't stop all the kicking them to pieces and stuff. But Clattenburg's kind of weighed in on this whole story, and well, I'll read it from here. So he says, word for word, "I allowed them, Spurs, to self-destruct. So all the media, all the people in the world went, Tottenham lost the title. If I sent three players off from Tottenham, what are the headlines? Clattenburg cost Tottenham the title. It was pure theatre that Tottenham self-destructed against Chelsea and Leicester won the title." And he goes on to say things like he helped the game, he, you know, it wasn't him that was the story, probably would have lost anyway, but he wasn't.
He went on to say he had a game plan, which I think was quite a telling quote.
Mm.
Now, I've heard it before from referees saying before the game they've got to think about how it's going to play out and how each team will play, and I think I've always wondered why they do that, but I've never ever heard a referee say something as out there as "I had a game plan" and a strategy for the match. It's deeply concerning that Clattenburg was more concerned about the media headlines than he was about going by the book. And I think he literally says as well, some referees would have played by the book, but I didn't. In other words, some referees would have obeyed the laws of the game.
He was always a bit celebrity ref, wasn't he?
Yeah, he's always a bit of a gobshite who likes the limelight.
Yeah.
I think you have to wonder kind of why he's saying it. And I just almost feel like he probably can't help himself. He likes the attention. But it is a bit concerning. And I think a lot of people have been worried that certain Premier League referees like to be the story, or like to affect the story. And there were questions about Martin Atkinson on Saturday, obviously, at Watford. I'm not suggesting that he wanted to be the story there, but I think we know who the culprits are. And this is kind of confirmation from one of the very best referees. He was the best referee in the Premier League for a long time, that he was thinking of his own image before thinking of upholding the laws of the game. And that's not really what you want to hear.
I think what leaves a sour taste for me, and I don't really give that much of a shit. What happened, happened. But what is difficult for me to digest is that the whole thing that we were talking about around the time of that game and the 2 or 3 weeks leading up to it was all the Chelsea players saying they want Leicester to win the title, and clearly all of the media seeing that as the story. And you just think, well, how easy is it to manipulate this then? And someone who's got complete control over that game. The other thing I was going to say is that what happens if we go up the other end of the 90th minute and score from a corner or something because we've got 11 men on the pitch, which would never have happened if we were down to 8, which is what probably should have happened, at least probably. You know what? He's not going to be coming out and saying this. He's never going to be coming out and saying, "I really should have done this because who knows what might have happened after that." You know, I think you're right. I think it is the whole self. He's not even a ref anymore, is he? He went out to.
He's head of referees in Saudi Arabia.
That's right. Yeah, I mean.
I mean, I think that your first point's a good one, because it's easy to forget now, but the whole feeling at the time was so pro Leicester, and I know that's something that Pochettino was a bit concerned about, and he probably didn't use the media as well as he could have done, and I don't think the Spurs players used the media as well as they could have done at the time, but there was a lot of pro-Leicester feeling, and it wasn't just the Chelsea players, it was
Swansea.
The Swansea manager, I've forgotten his name now.
Gundo... No, Gwydlin. Yeah.
I think Pulis came out and said something along those lines, like it would be great to see them win the league before playing Spurs. So the whole atmosphere of the Premier League at the time was, the professionalism had kind of slipped, and obviously Klattenberg doesn't allude to Leicester or really mention them too much in there, but you do wonder whether that was also part of his thinking. You know, I don't want to upset the fairy tale, you know, that this, I'm going to let the game play out because of external pressures related to Leicester's fairy tale.
And but we went 2-0 up as well. It's not like he kept 11 men on the pitch and we were 3-0 down. We went 2-0 up at half time. All right, we lost it in the second half, but we were kicking lumps out of them all through that first half. Probably could have gone down to 10 men in that first half as well.
I think there my memory's a bit hazy, but Dyer should definitely have been sent off.
Yeah, he had four yellows. Yeah, unbelievable.
Lamella's no-look stamp on Fabregas was arguably a red. Walker, I think Danny Rose was in a kind of half, sort of scuffle at half time.
Dembele's
eye gouge, which Klattenberg missed and oddly didn't bring up. He was then retrospectively banned, wasn't he, for 6 games. So, yeah, definitely Spurs deserved at least one player sent off in that game. And I think basically I don't think it's what you want to hear from a Premier League referee, and I don't think he's done any of his former colleagues in the Premier League any favours whatsoever.
Yeah, I agree.
There's now going to be far more scrutiny on them, and I think what we need is the rule book to be a bit clearer. There are still so many instances in the Premier League where I'm like, you know, that looked like a handball, but I don't actually know what the rule is there. Or even Sanchez is sending off on Saturday. There were some people saying, well, that's a professional foul. Mm. Other people saying that's violent conduct. It would be useful if the rules were a lot clearer and we knew that referees were going to essentially use the rule book, not their own interpretation.
Yeah, I was about to say let's move on, but I've realised that we've got Leicester to talk about and we've got a contentious refereeing decision against Watford to talk about. But We can probably mix these two games in together, partly because Leicester was close to a week ago now anyway. Pochettino said that they lacked fight after that game, and he's gone on to say that he's responsible for the run that he's in. This was before Watford, isn't it? Do you think that's fair? Because do you remember after the Arsenal game a couple of weeks ago when we were sitting here and you said to me, I think, oh, you're going to say something like they lacked passion or something like that, and I didn't think so, and I still don't think so, really. I don't think we've been meek. I just think we've been a bit dumb in the last few games. And a bit, you know, West Brom, we just switched off, and then you've got so much of a battle against West Brom already, but particularly after giving them a soft goal. Going away to Leicester, they're on a big bounce, and Vardy and Mahrez are really on it, and Gray, and we just sort of played into their hands a little bit. Watford, first attempt they've got on goal goes in. We just look a bit stupid at the moment, and a bit, I mean, it's in a simple sense, we're just out of form, aren't we?
Yeah, we are. But I don't think the lack of fight thing is completely without substance. I mean, I think there's a case at the moment that beating Real Madrid 3-1 on the first day of this month, or last month now, was such a good result, and it was such a signpost of progress for Tottenham. I do wonder now whether the players just took their eye off the ball a little bit after that. And I think the one thing we've been guaranteed from Pochettino Spurs almost every week for the last kind of 2.5 years, but before the last few games, was that even if they were missing a bit of quality, that they'd usually work harder, run further, press more, and kind of outfight the opposition. I know that's quite a simplistic view of it, but I think in the Premier League you've just got to do that all the time. And I do think there's a slight case of maybe going to some games thinking, oh well, we're going to win this comfortably. And I think the West Brom game was a good example of that. Very sloppy at the beginning, and you know, it might be that the Spurs players have to kind of go back to basics really, and just the bottom line has to be that you want it more than the opponents, because if that doesn't happen in the Premier League, you do tend to get bad results. And I think there has been an element of that in the last few games.
Particularly in Premier League, this is the sort of time of year when teams start to settle and really know whereabouts they're likely to finish in the league, barring a kind of miraculous recovery a la Everton, possibly, or a complete collapse, like, but we don't know, hopefully not us. But it happened this time last year, didn't it? And I know Kane was out, but we went...
Yeah, and Alderweireld as well. It's not unprecedented, yes, yeah. I think, what was it, 1-10?
Yeah, we've got 4 without a win this season, and we went 4 without a win last season as well. What really I hark back to is that first season under Pochettino when... And I know we're a very different animal now, but we were playing probably just as badly or disjointedly or maybe inconsistently, but we would still win. We got loads of last minute winners, didn't we, in that first Poch year, like Haaland, Swansea, and I remember loads of them away from home. And it almost feels as if we've forgotten that fight, or we've forgotten how to be that, almost an underdog. Because that beating Real Madrid makes you not an underdog for any game in domestic football after that, really. And it's why things like the United result was so disappointing. Going to Old Trafford and putting in that sort of performance. Arsenal again a couple of weeks later. And again, like beating Liverpool at home 4-1, we kind of we have this in us, but we don't seem to be able to carry it forward. We're a bit of a turn up on the night sort of team at the moment, and that is a bit worrying, and that's not Pochettino's way. Pochettino's way is consistency and longevity of everything that he's done. So, you know what I mean, like the system, process and stuff. So
I think it is important to point out that it was a similar run last year, 1-10, but I think the difference was, if I remember rightly, last year in that run, Spurs were still quite tight defensively. It just really wasn't clicking up front.
Yeah.
And at the moment,
we weren't beaten until this time last year. We were unbeaten until Chelsea in December, when we lost at Stamford Bridge.
And that was based on a really solid defence. Mm. At the moment, I think the concern is that it's just looking so sloppy at the back. Mm. And 3 early goals conceded in consecutive games against supposedly inferior opponents, West Brom, Leicester, and then Watford, and you know, almost every time it was on their first significant attack, it was like as soon as there was a bit of pressure, it was a goal. And Watford was really disappointing. It was just some sloppy marking from the corner. Leicester, the high line just didn't work. No one went with Vardy. Obviously West Brom, I did with Tom Allnutt last week, but really bad mistake from Ali, bad mistake from Sanchez, mistake from Lloris, and Spurs are 1-0 down. So I think that's a bit concerning, because it feels like not only is one element of the team not working, but the whole team from back to front just isn't functioning. And I think, you know, for me, that there's a few kind of key elements of Pochettino's philosophy, and one of them is building from the back. He always bangs on about that. Another one is pressing from the front, defensive solidarity, and it feels like a lot of those elements have slipped. Spurs aren't really building that well from the back. They're going direct a bit too much. The defence has slipped. Mm. The pressing's not quite as intense, not quite as thorough as it has been. It just feels like from back to front, the team isn't working as it should.
Do you think another one of Pochettino's main elements of making a side is athletic fullbacks? And at the moment, we aren't playing the two most athletic fullbacks we've got for various different reasons, obviously. I thought Davies and Trippier were particularly disappointing against Watford. And that, for me, is the biggest concern.
It's the Kieran Trippier derby, isn't it, as well?
Yeah.
It's his game. I think he's got four assists and one goal in the last two against them, or the last three against them.
He put a ball across the box very early on that Kane missed. It didn't get to, and he slid into
the post.
I thought
it was a penalty, actually.
Oh, really? Yeah, I didn't see the replay of that in the end. But that last year went in. That seems to be the difference, almost. It's just these small margins. But we have to say there are a lot of players out as well, and
on the fullbacks, I think Poch got it wrong
against Watford.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I think in the last few games he's got it the wrong way around. Mm. I think against West Brom, when we knew they were going to sit deep, there were absolutely no surprises in that game. Really, it was no surprise West Brom sat deep and shithoused, particularly after they went 1-0 up, and that's unfair. it was a legitimate tactic. It was no surprise they sat deep and parked the bus, especially after they went 1-0 up. It was no surprise that Spurs really struggled to break them down. It was no surprise that Llorente came on because he's the only striker on the bench. And it was no surprise that Spurs put even more balls into the box when he came on, because that's what he encourages. And in that game, I think Tom and I covered it last week, but you just want players that have a bit of pace, can beat a man, can get to the byline. You don't really want Trippier and Davis, who can't beat a man, are going to toss the ball into the box. Then you go to Leicester a few days later. I get the need to rotate the fullbacks. We've done it so many times. They're really important. But that's the kind of game where there's going to be way more space. Leicester are going to come forward. And you know, why not have Trippier and Davis supplying Kane in that one? Then come to Watford. And again, I think, they, as you said, they missed the extra pace, athleticism that the other two, Rose and Aurier, can provide. And I think Ben Pearce has done an article for ESPN, a preview today on the website of the Apoel game, and he said Potts should stick with Davis and Trippier for Apoel and then bring Aurier and Rose in for Stoke next weekend, because Stoke are going to do what West Brom did and what Bournemouth did and what Palace did and what Barnsley did and what Burnley did. So I agree with Ben completely, but I can't see Potts doing that, because he seems to, for various reasons, have Trippier and Davis as his first choice at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, the difference last year is that the fullback rotation was an 80-20 split. 80% of the games was Rose and Walker. Trippier and Davis came in midweek games and games that we could afford to do that in, let's say. But this time it's been almost a direct split, hasn't it? And I just think Trippier...
Well, it has in the last few weeks, yeah, I think.
Trippier and Davis doesn't work. You need one... I just feel like one side of that needs to be...
I mean, I get that Aurier's been really poor, but...
Do you think?
Yeah, he has been.
I don't know, I think he's been very poor. I wouldn't say he's been very poor at all. I think he's done okay in nearly every game he's played.
I thought at Leicester he wasn't great.
No, but he's got the ball that he puts in for Llorente.
Yeah, the ball he puts in for Llorente was the chance, wasn't it?
Should we talk about Llorente?
He's quite fond of just passing to speedy attackers and giving them counter-attacks. I've noticed. He did it to Vardy a couple of times. He did it about three or four times to Andros Townsend and Zaha.
Loose cannon, let's say.
Yeah, but I mean, as I've said, I would still get him in for the Stoke game at Wembley, because I think we'll need him and Rose.
Let's talk Llorente. We've said, is this the third week in a row where we need to start worrying? I'm going to counter that and say, is this the third year that we need to start worrying about our second-choice striker? Because even Vinny Jansen had about three by now, right, all from the penalty spot. But he's shy. He looks absolute shy. And part of that is us not playing to his strengths and not adapting to when he comes onto the pitch, you know, changing how we play and trying to get it into spot and whatever. But the chance that Aurier put on for him against Leicester, he was 5 yards out. Something like that, and it goes over. It's just terrible, isn't it? I think it's a massive concern.
I think the concern with Llorente, or the problem with Llorente, is that he was supposed to be the guy that came in, didn't have the bedding in issues, and didn't need really to get up to speed, and didn't need to get used to the way Spurs played. He was supposed to be the experienced World Cup winner who would just come on, do a job, 10-15 minutes, get a couple of goals. Because when you sign a player in the last minute of the deadline, as we've seen with Sissoko, as we've seen in literally countless examples throughout football over the last kind of 10 years since the transfer window came in, it takes them a while to get up to speed. And I think in that sense, Llorente does deserve a bit of leeway, because it is really hard, and there's so many people that have said this, but the problem is it was supposed to be easier for him, and that's the issue. I think he missed pre-season with a broken arm at Swansea, so...
I also don't think we were expecting loads from him.
No, we weren't. It's
much more than what we're getting at the moment.
I think Spurs are expecting him to come on and score that chance at Leicester. And had he done that, he'd have done his job and he didn't need to do anything more. He just needed to put that in at the back post. I think Potts said after the Leicester game that he's struggling a bit with confidence, and again... completely fair enough, when you're a striker and you're not scoring, confidence drops. But again, because he's this experienced World Cup winning, Serie A winning, European Championship winning forward, confidence wasn't really supposed to be an issue.
No.
I think that the bigger problem is what you've touched on, really, that the policy is obviously been to find someone, albeit a young striker like Janssen, who's still improving and learning, or an experienced one like Llorente, who could back up Kane effectively and come on and for 15 minutes and start the cup games. But it's starting to look like a flawed policy overall, because I think whoever it is, young or old, they're always going to be out of touch. They're always going to be struggling for rhythm. They're always going to be a bit short of confidence if they're not scoring. So it almost doesn't matter what kind of player it is. I'm not sure it's going to work. And it does feel like, yeah, maybe, I don't know what the solution is. Maybe Spurs have to find another kind of Son type player who can get minutes in another position when Kane's on the pitch.
Berrino?
Well, I wouldn't suggest him specifically.
But
someone like him.
Yeah.
Because Kane is going to play most Premier League minutes. And he's already said he's a bit pissed off about being taken off on 85, especially when he scored a couple.
Mm.
He wants to play every single game. So whoever's backing him up is just not going to get that much time. So I do think someone who could play in the hole or in the wings and then do a job up front in the cups,
yeah,
or as an alternative.
Yeah.
Maybe that's the new system, because I don't think the policy's working.
Yeah, fair enough. Lamella's returned, just to talk of positives. Yeah, no, you that's snapped you out December, Dan, hasn't it? Nice touch for Kane's goal against Leicester. Came on and probably gave us the kind of fight that we actually needed with 10 men against Watford as well. He got himself about a little bit. Didn't really do much, but I think that's where I find him quite useful when he breaks stuff up. I mean, he was instantly into stuff and trying to break up playing against Watford. We're talking about a squad and how we are quite thin in certain areas and particularly low on confidence in certain areas as well. It's only a good thing, isn't it, to have Lamella back?
Yeah, I wasn't really sure if my excitement about Lamella was ironic or not. I wasn't sure at how serious I was. But it was really good to see him come on against Leicester and literally with his third touch get an assist. And Pochettino had been saying kind of a couple of press conferences before, I think before the West Brom game, about how they'd missed Lamella and he brought a new dimension to the final third. And I'm not even sure how much Poch believed it, really. But he came on against Leicester and he immediately provided what was missing, which was a bit of cuteness, a bit of composure and a bit of quality on the edge of the Leicester box.
Mm.
And I think, as you said, his intensity and kind of pressing and aggression is what he's really become useful for. Certainly since Poch came to the club, you know, he was signed as this kind of silky 30 million winger who's going to replace Bale's goals, but actually he's a bit more of a kind of tempo setter, aggressive front man who gives away lots of fouls and presses a lot. So he's done that, but then he's got this ability to pick a pass as well. He is good at those cute through balls. And I seem to remember before he was injured, he had quite a good relationship with Kane as well, and that kind of snapped back instantly. So I think that the Leicester assist, you know, it might be as good as it gets for him, and, you know, at least until the new year. I do think it's going to be a sort of slow process, but I think it was really positive, as you said, for the squad, and particularly given that Eriksen is, according to Pochettino, mentally tired.
And I was going to add in Ali there as well, who's clearly not right at the moment. And I know we've said that it was around about this time last year he was going for a similar patch in terms of his all-round play, but he's still got the numbers this season. Madrid was, like you say, only a month ago.
Yeah.
You know, he's clearly still... I think he's struggling to deal with being targeted, because he hasn't... Last season, the whole thing was still about Kane, it felt like. And it freed up a lot of room. And when Kane was out, Ali was struggling to get going a little bit. But then it worked as a three with Eriksen, Ali and Kane buzzing around each other. And sometimes Ali was the furthest forward and Kane would drop deep. He was a bit better footballer, better passer, better vision and stuff. And it doesn't seem to be any opportunity for Ali to do that at the moment. He's not really doing those kind of far post runs for Eriksen to find. And he doesn't feel like Dele Alli at the moment, does he? And do you think just from a hunch point of view, do you think there's anything actually wrong with Dele Alli at the moment?
Wrong?
Yeah. Mentally, preparation-wise, complacency maybe? Do you think he's... Because the impression... Look, I'm not saying this is my point of view, but cynics could say that he's done his Real Madrid audition and now he can't be asked.
Okay. Yeah, I don't really subscribe to that. We were saying on the pod for the best part of 2 years that at some point Ali was going to have a dip and we're just waiting for it to happen because he is 21. And it does feel like he's in the worst dip of his time at Spurs now. The Real Madrid game aside, he's just not been great this season. But as you said, he does still get the numbers. I mean, it was his cross for Kane at West Brom.
Yeah.
And I thought it was no surprise that he showed that little bit of quality he had. We've been flinging these high balls into the box, but he knew to put it low to Kane. And that was when West Brom were going to be a bit weaker. I actually thought he wasn't one of the guilty parties against Leicester.
No.
I thought he battled as well as anyone.
Very poor against Watford, though. Very, very poor.
Yeah, it's a tricky one. I don't think... He's obviously not been himself, and it's a bit of a worry. But last year, I think it took that sending off against Ghent to really spark him into action. I mean, he hadn't been great up until February. He had moments... He hadn't been consistently good.
No, and then his run was in December when he scored 10 in. Getting braces because he scored against two against Chelsea, scored against Burnley, scored against.
Oh yeah, you're
West
right.
Brom.
And then he dipped again. Right, and though. Then he dipped again. I think he scored in 6 or 7 consecutive games after Ghent. So he does go through these patches of being up and down.
And the whole team is at the moment as well. He's.
I think the biggest problem, really, is that. There's just no chance Poch can rest Eriksen or Ali. And you look at City, who have just so many attacking midfielders. We all know who they are, so I won't bother naming them. Even Liverpool, I think, the other week for the midweek game when Spurs were at Leicester, they were at... I can't remember. I think they might have been at Huddersfield. And they left Coutinho and Salah on the bench. Brought on Salah and scored. I think City left Sané... and Silva on the bench and brought one or both of them on, and there's just no chance that Spurs could have gone to Leicester and said, okay, tonight we rest Eriksen and Ali because the alternative is Nkudu or someone else. So
quite the drop off.
Nkudu and Sissoko come in, so it's really his form is a bit of a worry, but the bigger problem is that there's not really much Poch can do apart from keep playing him and hope he plays himself into some form again.
Which is fair enough, I think.
Yeah, which is the way he's going. I don't really buy that he's tired stuff because he missed three Champions League games. He missed a couple of England games with suspension as well, or at least one. He missed a couple of England games through injury. So he's missed 6 or 7 games at least that a lot of other players have played in.
Yeah.
So I think he's all right. I can understand the Eriksen tiredness stuff because... He's played almost every minute for Spurs in Denmark for about 3 years now. Yeah. He just doesn't stop playing.
And that always runs the furthest.
Yeah, that must take its toll eventually.
Fair enough. Just before we move on, little Davy Sanchez. What do you reckon?
I was right above it. The thing is, I haven't actually seen it back on Match of the Day or replay or anything like that. From where I was sitting, almost directly above it, it looks like... It was definitely more clumsy than malicious or violent. But it was probably a red card. I think he got skinned by Richarlison, didn't he?
But he hadn't really been. And Dembele was coming back as well. I think that's it. It's clumsy and it's a bit
It's clumsy.
Dumb.
I mean, I think it's instinctive to when someone's trying to run around you or run past you to get your arm out across them.
Can I ask a question as you were above it?
Yeah.
If it had happened 20, say 10 yards further up the pitch, not right in front of the Watford bench.
Yeah, I mean, I did
you
see...
feel like that would might have made a difference?
Maybe. I did actually see Silva's reaction, and he was right off his seat, kind of doing a big elbow gesture toward the ref, and that might have made a difference, and they were all kind of sprung off their feet. I think, really, it's instinctive to stick your arm out and you've got to do it at kind of waist or chest height. You can't be doing it where someone's face might be because you're just asking for a bit of trouble. I think the ref on the whole was poor though. I mean, how, I can't pronounce his name, Ziegler?
Yeah, Ziegler and Capicelli.
How one or both of them didn't get sent off. They quite clearly targeted Kane. Remember Southgate saying a few weeks ago, you know, Harry Kane doesn't stay down. It's true, he stayed down about four times against Watford. It was ankle, it was knee, it was thigh, it was ankle again, and he got a proper kicking. And I think in situations like that, you just want the ref to protect the player. I remember Kane came out and said it at Sunderland away last year, the 0-0. He came out after and said, you know, we need a bit more protection. And I think in that game, Dembele had the shit kicked out of him by Katamol.
Rose got injured as well.
And Rose,
yes, you're right. Yeah.
And Kane didn't do the mix zone on Saturday because, you know, he does it all the time and there wasn't really a story there. But I think it would have been very interesting to ask him if he felt like he had needed a bit more protection on Saturday, because I think he did.
Long term, that's Sanchez out for three games, Stoke, Brighton, and probably most notably Man City, which isn't great at the best of times, but in particular when you look at our defences off form, and also Toby is now, there's been some quotes suggesting that he could, and I stress could, be out until April. He says 14 weeks, but isn't this all a bit ifs and buts? Like,
I think it was a bit,
if it's worse than we think and I have to have surgery, it could be April.
Yeah, it was translated from the Belgian media, so you got to be careful with it. I mean, I suggested to ESPN that we do a news story on it, and they didn't really want to touch it just because it wasn't clear exactly, you know, what he was saying there. It was difficult to clarify that. But I think it's obviously bad news. Just, it's such a double whammy with Wanyama out as well.
Yeah.
Do you feel like if Wanyama was fit, there'd be fewer concerns about just dropping Dier back in there, and actually it wouldn't be too much of a problem. But without Wanyama, it makes it really difficult now to play three at the back, unless Poch is going to play Davis there or just trust Foyth.
Yeah.
I mean, immediately, you've got to play Foyth and Alderweireld against Apoel, haven't you?
Alderweireld.
Sorry, Foyth and Sanchez against Apoel.
Yeah.
Sanchez is going to be suspended. Give Vertonghen a bit of a rest and then try and...
And it's a dead rubber.
Yeah, and hope that Foyth gets a bit of confidence and a feel for the ball in that game.
It's terrifying to think of City away anyway. But, I mean, we really rode our luck last season and we got away with a 2-2. But
yeah, I mean,
it could be the
result they really deserved last season, which is about 4 or 5 nil.
Yeah,
we Spurs get it, but you know, Spurs don't tend to lose by a lot of goals. It doesn't happen very often. The last time I can remember was Newcastle.
Yeah, and which is an anomaly anyway.
Yeah,
I
think people are already saying, you know, how many City can score, but actually that doesn't tend to work like that.
Did that against West Ham, didn't they? And it only turned out to be 2-1. Yeah. So, you know, maybe we're playing them at the best possible time. Who knows? Apoel is on Wednesday. Like I say, complete dead rubber. I feel like we've had this conversation a lot about who do we play ahead of what is now a crucial league game. But even Pochettino can't be mad enough to start Kane and Dier and Vertonghen and even Lloris. Like, I'd stick Gazzaniga in there. I just don't care.
Poor old form.
Yeah, that's fair.
I think, but there aren't that many players though, are there?
No, true. But I mean,
I think it's
we say it every time.
It's a bit tricky though. I'd give Edwards a go. It's a bit tricky because I think if things were going better in the league, then it would just be such a free hit and a complete nothing of a game. But actually, Apoel can still get in the Europa League at Dortmund's expense. I think they just need to avoid it. I think if they get a point, they're okay. And Dortmund have a better goal difference. They drew 1-1 in both the games, so I don't think the head-to-head comes into play. But they've got a slightly worse goal difference. So basically, they've got something to play for. I think just given how poor the league form is, it's first come, you don't really want to be losing that. Just from a confidence point of view.
We put the B team out against West Ham, didn't we? And that really bit us in the end. I mean, we went 2-0 up, but we completely switched off second half. And if you could argue, Real Madrid game aside, that that could have been a, that's almost a precursor for our bad run of form. I think it's only Real Madrid that we've actually beaten since we lost to West Ham and Palace, I suppose.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's just never good winning games, is it? And I think in different circumstances, it would be a real opportunity to play the, some a load of young players and give them an experience of the Champions League at Wembley and all the good things that comes with that.
Dean Parrott.
Dean Parrott.
Get Dean Parrott back.
Yeah, get back. Sign him up. But as it is, he doesn't want to lose.
No.
Poch won't want to lose. And like I think Ericsson can't be playing.
No.
Vertonghen, Kane.
Dyer, I'd say not risk. Don't risk any defenders.
Yeah,
basically.
Probably don't risk Dyer. Yeah.
Yeah. It's all obviously in light of Stoke on Saturday. They're in pretty rough form as well, I think, aren't they, at the moment? Mark Hughes is under a bit of pressure. They did beat Swansea, but I was going to say everyone beat Swansea, but we didn't. You know, it's a fair point. This feels like the best and probably worst game that you want to get your league season back on track a little bit, isn't it? Because they really are going to drop, but I don't feel like they've got the same ability to do what they used to do and spoil quite as much as they used to. They're still absolute cloggers, but they don't have that old Stoke Pulis thing anymore, I don't think. And we do seem to have the measure of them lately in the last few seasons. I don't think we've dropped points to them for a while. How do you see it?
Yeah, I think, as I said against as I said for the West Brom game, I don't think there's going to be any surprises, really. I think we know already how Stoke are going to play. They're going to defend quite deep, try and counter-attack, and I think they've got a few kind of quite relatively skillful, quite quick forward players who they'll try and get one-on-one with the centre-backs and full-backs, and they'll try and nick a goal like West Brom did, I imagine. But apart from that, they'll sit deep, and Hughes will have done his homework and will know how hard Spurs find that, and then it'll just be about Spurs being better than they have been in most of those games at Wembley so far. And
Crouch could cause us quite a few problems, I feel. Big pitch.
He doesn't often start, does he?
No, but I get the feeling that Hughes might look at our defence being a bit battered as it is. And you never know, he could get some joy out of that, and then
I like Crouch.
I love Crouch.
It'd be good to play against him. I think he'll get a really good reception. But I think that there's certain things Pochettino can do personnel wise, and I mentioned some of them already. I think it would be good to play the two quick fullbacks, Aurier and Rose. I think there's even a case for starting Lamela in that one.
Yeah.
Just getting someone who's going to increase the intensity, increase the tempo.
Winks as well is a huge issue.
Winks, I think
there's
a case for playing Winks.
Tempo wise.
And just get at them. I think Son was probably the standout player against West Brom because he was the only one really running at them, running at the byline, putting in low crosses, and that was quite effective. It was a low cross where the goal came from. I don't really want to see more of Trippier and Davis and Eriksen kind of floating balls toward the penalty spot. For Butland to come out and claim or short cross whoever it is to head away. It's that happened too much at Wembley so far this season. And Spurs have to be cleverer than that.
Has Winks been ill?
I think he just missed the Leicester game through illness, but he came on at Watford.
Yeah, it just felt like Watford was an ideal game for him.
Yeah, I think it might have been that he just wasn't quite well enough to start.
It's amazing, isn't it, how quickly he's become so vital to what we do.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't feel like a purple patch for Winks. This feels like when Kane got going in that first season under Poch, and it was keep the momentum up, but he's always improving and proving himself in these big games. Like Kane did it against Arsenal and Chelsea, and Winks has already done it this season against Liverpool and Real Madrid, our two probably standout victories so far. and he feels like you can't leave him out at the moment. And Dembele is looking like the reported 70% or whatever Pochettino called him before the season started.
I think he said that himself.
Then. I mean, he looks it now. He looked like he was I'm a bit
wary of these takes writing off Dembele, because I think, as you've said before on the pod, which is a good point, Spurs tend to collectively play very well and collectively play quite poorly. So when it's going well, you think over the last two seasons, you could have legitimately made a case for every single player in the first 11 to be the player of the year.
Mm.
And obviously Kane was the talisman, Ali was the poster boy, but you could have said Dembele player of the year, Lloris, Walker, Rose, Eriksen. I think it was such a collective achievement, and I think it's been collectively bad in the last kind of month or so since Dembele's come back into the team as well. And admittedly, he hasn't looked his beastly self, but I think if the team gets going again, then you know, why won't Dembele get going again?
Fair.
You see what I mean?
Yeah, I will
caveat that by saying Kane in the last three games has been standout, I think.
In a positive sense. I guess there's a video.
He's just, his quality now at just passing the ball.
Mm.
He's like pinging all these 30-yard passes to the flanks with each feet when he's being pulled down by two defenders.
Yeah.
It's like, how are you doing that?
He looks a bit like, and it's a really ridiculous comparison, but he really looks like when Rooney was bang on form for his early years at United. Very difficult to shrug off the ball, and just everything was powerful and almost unnecessarily powerful with it. Like, he'd ping balls out to the wing and stuff just to switch it and stuff, and he looks like he's in that kind of confidence, I'm England's number one best striker in the league sort of thing, isn't he? But he's another one that isn't 100% fit.
He doesn't look kind of completely sharp.
No.
And yet I still think he's been a standout player in the last three games,
which says everything really, doesn't it? That's a good way to, a good positive thing to end that on. I think before we started recording, I said that we need to, since we've done this podcast, which is 2.5 years old, we've not actually been terrible or bad to watch, let's say, for this long.
Did we do a pod after the Newcastle game? I can't remember.
Yeah, we did it with Jim and Ollie, and we
we
just about got through it. We took that in context of a very good season.
Yeah.
This is quite difficult, and it's very difficult to think about Spurs. And I'm almost not friends with Spurs at the moment. They're annoying me, and they're ignoring my texts. And
yeah, it's just a bit difficult, because I think last season was just so good.
Mm.
And you'd go to White Hart Lane every game, and whenever a smaller team came, in fact, whenever any team came, I suppose we were just all over them from start to finish, and it was kind of relentless suffocation of every opposition, and usually a 3-4 5-0 scoreline, and it was great to watch, and there was such a good feeling about the club. And now, you know, even if results were better, Wembley's obviously not the same, it's not home, and everything's just a bit less slick, a bit less enjoyable.
One of the boys left Walker going in the summer. I genuinely think that's had a bit more of a knock-on.
Quite possibly, yeah. So it does feel a bit flat at the moment, but I think you're right. Since we've been doing the pod, we've only had good times. And
yeah.
Got to take the bad with the good.
Exactly. You want the rainbow? You've got to put up with the rain. No, yeah, we have to approach it like the club does. We are calm. We're still a good club. We're still a good podcast, Dan.
Yes,
Don't get so down.
No, I'm not.
No, you're not.
I'm
actually
chirpy.
You've done well. Right,
I'm not actually chirpy. I'm just upbeat. The bird.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, miles away then. Yeah, it's all Chirpy's fault. Let's end this now before we get more ridiculous.
Yeah.
Well, it's nice to see you. Hopefully next time we'll actually have some positive results to speak about. Next Monday, so hopefully you'll be able to join us then. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll see you next week. Bye.
Goodbye.